Welcome to episode 2 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast on the Picture List Podcast Network. It's a glorious Monday. The weather isn't great in New York, but the sun is shining on the Yankees. And my name is Randy Wilkins, and I'm with my dog, to quote Alex Verdugo, Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. The weather is much better here in Phoenix. We're recording this before Monday night's game, so whatever happened, if the Yankees lose 15-0 and we don't discuss it, that is the reason why.
Yeah, the schedule is built off of Chris's very crazy schedule. So obviously he's traveling with the team, and we do it when Chris has that window before he has to go to the ballpark. So yes, don't yell at us or tweet at us. Why didn't you talk about the Yankees getting their butts kicked by the Diamondbacks? If that happens, or if they win 15-0, that's why we didn't sing their praises, because we didn't know that it's happening. We won't know until next week, I guess. So I know we're going to get into specific topics and players and stuff, but you being there, what was the atmosphere like? What was the clubhouse like? What was the stadium like? I want to know how Astros fans were reacting in the building after watching their favorite team get swept by the Yankees. So just help us paint the picture of what it was like from your vantage point.
Yeah, I mean, the vibes are high in the Yankees clubhouse. After the game, they were listening to DMX. They were listening to the new Future and Kendrick Drake diss track, like that.
Wait, hold on. Can we stop for a second? Okay, so I was watching a post game and I heard the song. I think you guys were interviewing Clark Schmidt, somebody, and I heard it in the background. And the entire time, I'm like, I know Chris is there, but what this, and Brendan Cootie's there. And I know that, like, you know, he's a big hip hop aficionado. And, you know, but then I'm thinking guys like John Heyman listening to this, like Randy Miller, if he's there.
Yeah, I'm
like,
no,
oh, he wasn't there.
No, he was. It's funny, he was. Because, I'm cool with Randy. I know some Yankee fans may feel differently about Randy, but I like Randy personally. But Randy's like almost 60 years old, and he's like, oh, this music is just noise. It's just noise.
You know, you didn't ask him about the big three?
I did not ask him about his thoughts on the beef between Drake, J. Cole, and Kendrick. But no, it's just funny because like him and John were actually – it's funny you mentioned those two specifically, because like they were in the corner just like shaking their heads at the music. I mainly just listen to rap. So, I mean, I like it and I know the music, but it's just funny like seeing guys like him, Randy Heyman, Pete Caldera, who's also on the beat for the Bergen record.
He was great.
Yeah, he's been on the beat for like 20 years. I love Pete. He sings Frank Sinatra.
Yes.
Like on the side. So like he's like, ah, this music it's not for me. But it's just funny that, you know, the players on the team are mostly like around my age. So we have that in common. But it's just funny like seeing the older guys on the beat having to be subjected to that music for however long we are in there.
We need P. Caldera to do a cover of Like That next winter and see how he can put his own spin on the beef. That'd be great. So, sorry, I cut you up. I just had to ask you about that. So, yes, the vibes are high. Please let us know what else was going on.
Yeah, the vibes are definitely high. The Astros fans were booing Soto like every single at bat. You know, obviously, he has history in Houston with him winning the World Series with the Washington Nationals in 2019. It seems like Soto feeds off that. Some guys, you know, cower or it gets in their heads. I think back to several Yankees. We don't have to name them. You know who. But, yeah, I mean, it seems like he embraces that I'm curious to see if, you know, if he has a 10 for 60 slump and it's June and the Yankees are scuffling and they're playing at Yankee Stadium. Well, you know, would he feel differently if Yankee Stadium boos him? Because, you know, they don't discriminate in the Bronx. They'll boo whoever. They boo Aaron Judge. They boo Jeter. They booed Rivera. So it doesn't matter. So I'm curious to see if he is fine with that. If it happens, I mean, I think he's just a spectacular hitter. I don't even see it happening, honestly. But yeah, I mean, I think everything is good right now in Yankee land. It's hard to complain about anything when you start 4-0 and you sweep the Houston Astros on the road in a building that has given them tremendous trouble over these past few years, especially in the playoffs. You know, they're 1-8 in Houston since 2017. So it's not a building that's been friendly to them over the past few years. So I think just the fact that they went in there opening weekend, swept a good team, they'll probably be a playoff team, Houston, I would assume. You know, they have the talent. I think it made a statement. You know, it may seem crazy that, you know, it's four games in and we're talking about, oh, statement wins. But, you know, just considering the opponent, I do think that is a statement. And Clark Schmidt, who we spoke to yesterday, you know, said it best. You know, he said, we're here. We're showing people across the league that, you know, the Yankees are back. So we'll see if it continues. They're playing another really good team in Arizona, who obviously won the National League last year and has a really, really, really deep pitching staff. They don't even have Jordan Montgomery yet. So I'm interested to see how the offense looks against a really good pitching staff in Arizona.
Yeah, I think the statement made was more on the letting the entire league know. I'm not necessarily sure if Houston will take that statement and run with it just because of their success. I mean, there's most of the guys on that team have never lost to the Yankees in a playoff series. So I think their veteran savvy and experience and their experiences with the Yankees, I'm not sure if that message will necessarily land with the Astros, but I do think the message is for the entire league that, you know, this is a different iteration of the Yankees with a different attitude, different approach, obviously a better roster. So I agree, not that I would disagree with someone that's actually on the team and has a perspective being in the middle of it. But I do agree that it kind of puts people on notice that this team is capable of doing much more than they have, certainly last year and maybe even in 22, where for a lot of people that might have felt like fool's gold for a while. This four games in, yes, but you could just tell just with the personnel that this feels a little bit more legit and has a better chance of really sustaining itself. So I agree with that, but at the center of it, let's just get right into it. You mentioned him, Juan Soto. I can't think of an acquisition that the Yankees have made for a player of that caliber over the last 20, 25 years. And this includes A-Rod, maybe longer, where that player made such an immediate impact on the entire organization. Like, even when A-Rod got there, they kind of got off to a slow start. He got off to a slow start. Derek had that crazy slump, and that was partly in relation to getting used to A-Rod being there and all the craziness that was going on between the two of them and now being teammates and blah, blah, blah. Juan Soto came in even from the first day of spring and seemingly influenced and transformed and impacted the entire organization, players, staff, coaching, front office, everything. And then in the first series against your rival, just totally dominated in all aspects of the game. It was remarkable. I cannot think of a player that the Yankees acquired of such a caliber that just took over a series and was just basically saying, this is my playground. I'm going to impact my will or put my will on this and put my stamp on it. And you can't do anything about it. It was a remarkable performance.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good word to use. Remarkable, special, otherworldly, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it was all of that. And I think the crazy thing to me is the fact that he was also very, very good defensively. I saw a stat actually this morning that he graded out as the best defender across baseball, which, you know, Soto last year with the San Diego Padres was literally one of the worst defenders in the sport. So I think that was where he made the biggest impression to me. Cause like I knew that Soto was an incredible hitter, knew about his plate discipline, all that. But I will say the, you know, just watching him up close for these past 4 days in Houston, I mean, it's like on another level when you're in person. Just his ability to read the strike zone. He knows where, like, he knows precisely where the strike zone is. I mean, the discipline that he has is just tremendous. What I like most about watching Soto is it's kind of like a personal war between the pitchers. Like if the pitcher, you know, throws a nice pitch. I mean, there was a moment in Sunday's game when Astros starter JP France struck Soto out on a curveball, like low and out of the zone. You know, Soto like walks back to the dugout, like shaking his head. Like, yeah, that was like a really nice pitch. So, I mean, it's just like little things like that, that you don't really see often. I can't remember a Yankee, like, you know, doing that kind of stuff. And like, yeah, like that was a really nice pitch. I'll get you back the next time. Or even like in the at bat with Hader, where he hit the opposite field single to win the game on Sunday. I think it was a 2-2 count. Hader threw like a slider inside and, you know, Soto shaking his head again and saying like, all right, I saw that pitch, you know, throw it again, essentially. But yeah, I mean, it was really, really cool to see him do what he did this past weekend. It's just, I think Stroman said it best when, you know, I asked Stroman, I was like, you know, I forgot the question I asked, but essentially like, you know, what did you think of Soto? And he's like, he's one of those players that, you know, when my son grows up and he has kids and I'm a granddad, like I can say that I played with him. And it's kind of like, I had a similar feeling this weekend. Like, you know, whenever I have kids and that they have kids, you know, I can tell them, you know, like I actually covered Soto. I mean, I think he's that special of a player. I'm very interested to see, you know, how far this team can go. If he's not going to hit over 500, but if he has a season where he's hitting close to 300, 40 plus homers, you know, he's right in the MVP race. I mean, I think this team has the ability to do special things.
I agree. So obviously my daytime job is as a filmmaker and came up under Spike Lee. And I bring that up because there are rare moments where people have an opportunity to be around either someone that has mastered their craft or is clearly on that path to mastering their craft. And by the time I met Spike, he was already Spike and well on his way to being a master director. But you learn so many things. You learn not just the work ethic, but what the specific components of that work ethic are and how that actually translates into art and how you see it and how you get to that creation and that process of creating something great. I feel like we're in the midst of that with Soto. And I love Aaron Judge. I still think this is Aaron Judge's team. I saw somebody tweeting that all of a sudden this is Juan Soto's team. It's Aaron Judge's team. He's the captain. He's still the guy. He just, you know, didn't have the best series, but it didn't matter. They won anyway. But Soto does things in a totally different manner. And as you mentioned or alluded to, he doesn't mind showcasing what he's thinking and allowing his emotions to be a part of his process or his journey. And I think with so many Yankees, they're probably thinking the same thing that he is when somebody throws a good pitch or they get you and it's kind of like, okay, he got me on that one, but I'm going to get it back. But part of Juan Soto's whole aura and character is, yeah, I acknowledge it, but I'm so confident that I'm letting you know this is in my memory bank. I'll be back. And to see someone who is good enough to actually bring those things out of the memory bank and have it work to his advantage later on is very unique and rare, I feel like, but also just letting us know that he's on this journey with the pitcher. Like he engages in this quote unquote battle that's going to be happening for 4, 5, 6, however many at bats throughout the day. And it just brings a different energy. I mean, I know I'm stating the obvious here. We can all see it. And it's not like that's some great insight on my part, but to just see a young master at work wearing a Yankees uniform, it's just something we haven't seen in a long time, and it's refreshing, you know? And you know that when he steps in the box, whether he gets the result or not, you know that you're going to see a competitive at bat every time. And I know we talked about this last week, but you can already see the impact of that attitude impacting the team. I saw a stat earlier with Volpe, Wells, and Cabrera, and we'll talk about them in a little while, that the three of them are seeing a full pitch more in their at bats in this series than they did last year. And I know that for Volpe, that was a point of emphasis, and Cabrera's, as you pointed out in your article in The Athletic, paying attention to Soto. Wells is also working on his craft. But it's not just because they felt like, okay, I got to do this for next season. They see a guy that actually knows how to do it and does it all the time. Like, that's his identity. So it was just great to see him perform well and have such an impact, but also to see that influence in real time, in real games, and to have that also benefit the team.
One thing I also wanted to mention about Soto, you know, as a reporter who I have to, you know, write about this team and come up with stories. I said it last week, but I've been missing that personality on a day-to-day basis. And Soto is very personable. I mean, you see it on the field. He's pounding his chest. And, you know, when Verdugo made the sliding catch on Sunday, he's, you know, skipping like a kid on the playground, you know, across the field. You know, they're yelling. You know, Verdugo's after the game yesterday saying, like, you know, we're dogs out here. Like, I like that stuff. And I think baseball as a whole has been missing personality, I feel like. You just, like, look across the league and you I feel like you rarely know the personalities of, like, the big stars. Like, Mike Trout, I mean, to me, he's, like, he's white milk, essentially. He's like it's like the blandest. He's like the blandest guy out there, and it's like he's incredible.
His whole milk.
I mean, he's incredible to watch, but it's like, does he have a personality? I have no clue.
Right.
I have no idea. You know, Ohtani is a separate thing because, you know, it's private, and, you know, I get the Japanese culture and all that, but I just wish baseball would showcase its personalities and embrace them. And I hope that, you know, moving forward, the Yankees do embrace that, because as we both know, they're very buttoned up and corporate. And it feels like, you know, when you go to the Yankees, your personality is stripped from you. So I do hope that continues moving forward, because I feel like there are several personalities that could make the season be even more fun if they're winning, if they're embracing those personalities. So I do hope that continues. And that was something that I noted from this weekend, is just like how much fun the clubhouse seems this year. Mm-hmm. You know, last year, you know, obviously they weren't a good team, but even in the beginning when, you know, the hopes were high, it just seemed bland. Mm-hmm. There was no flavor in the clubhouse. So I do hope that continues moving forward.
You didn't think Jake Bowers brought that flavor?
Bowers is a very nice guy, but
no shot at Bowers. He's just the first guy that popped up in my head. So
Bowers, Billy McKinney, they weren't doing much.
They weren't playing like that in the clubhouse.
they weren't. They actually were like, if you walk into the Yankees clubhouse, like It's like right on the left, Bowers, Billy McKinney, Ian Hamilton, like Ron Marinaccio was on the other side. So it's like they were like listening to Taylor Swift and country music and whoever. Like if they were in the clubhouse and they were playing music and no one else was in there, it was like usually like country or soft rock.
So then you turn into Randy Miller and John Heyman when you walk in there.
Exactly. Exactly. That to me is noise.
Yeah. I would agree. again, no shot at Taylor Swift. Don't want the Swifties coming after us music.
We do not want Swifties.
Nah, no smoke with you guys.
Yeah, I will say if the Swifties do hear that, I mean, our listenership will increase dramatically.
Yeah, we'll be billionaires by then. there's one more point I wanted to bring up with Soto that I'm really curious to get your thoughts on, because I think it's more of a big picture thing. And I know there's been a lot of talk from Boone and others saying that Soto's pretty much the embodiment of what they want a Yankee to be. And he's shown that throughout the spring and then the first four games of the season. But for me, he's also the embodiment of this change in process. And I think that he's also the perfect guy because he's super talented, but also process driven and like process oriented. And he represents, in my mind, the Yankees changing their process up. And we saw that at least in the first four games. Obviously, they added to the roster. The roster is much better. They finally went after left-handed hitters. So that's been a change from the last 4 or 5 years, however many years it's been when it's righty heavy. There was clearly an aggression, not just from Boone managing the bullpen, especially in the last couple games, but also not having a punt lineup when they have a chance to sweep the Astros. It just seems up and down since the winter to now. And I remember there's a lot of talk about the audit and is it a self audit? Is it some outside company auditing their analytics and all this other stuff that we talked about over the winter, but they clearly have changed some things and changed their process and their results so far have been very good. But I'm curious how you feel, if you think that that's true at all, and how Soto kind of factors into the changing of approach and mentality from the entire organization to put into this 2024 season.
Well, I'll start with like the lineup construction. I definitely thought it was interesting when they posted the lineup in the clubhouse and, you know, guys like Jemai Jones or John Birdie weren't in there. Birdie was in there after Volpe got sick with an upset stomach, but you know, Birdie wasn't in there initially. And usually in years past, I feel like one of the biggest complaints with Yankee fans is it's a getaway day. You know, they got a flight to the West Coast. They got to play Phoenix today. So it's like, we'll give Jemai Jones a chance. We'll put, you know, Trent Grisham in there and we'll see what happens. I mean, I thought it was interesting after, I believe it was Friday's game when Glaber got hurt. He got hit with the pitch on his thumb and he was in the lineup the next day and we're still in March. I feel like usually, we'll give Glaber the day off just to be, you know, extra, extra cautious. Yeah. You know, he took himself out of the game late in the game. We'll give him the day and he was in there. Soto, you know, twists his ankle. I think it was the same game and he's in there the following day. So I do think it's interesting that it's at least seemingly like going all out and trying to win every game. I do feel like it gets missed in September when, you know, we're talking about the standings every single day. You know, the Mariners missed the playoffs by one game last year. Who knows, you know, an April game where, you know, they had a lineup that wasn't their A lineup and they lost that game. Like, you never know. Like, sometimes these games do matter, even though it's, you know, game two, game three, game four of the season that we're talking about. Like, they all add up to the same. So I did think that was interesting. And we asked Boone about it on Sunday before the game because, you know, I think everybody, all the reporters felt like, okay, like this seems different. you know, he said that John Birdie was going to play and he didn't. And then Boone clarified, like, I said, probably will play. Like, you know, in my two years now covering the team, whenever Boone says, yeah, probably, that means that he's playing. He's just not going to 100%. It's like 99.9% that whatever he says after probably is going to happen. And then Birdie didn't play. And then he was like, yeah, well, I said probably. That doesn't mean, yeah, he's playing. But he wasn't playing because Oswaldo has been, you know, incredible so far. So I do think it's interesting that, you know, they acquired this guy, John Birdie, from Miami with the idea that he was going to platoon at third base with DJ LeMahieu out with Cabrera. And Cabrera's been hot and Cabrera's been in there and it's been impossible to take him out. So I don't know if the philosophy has changed. Boone downplayed it, but I don't know if he would say publicly, like, yeah, we're trying to win every single game with our best lineup. I don't think he would come out and say that, but I think you can read between the lines and be like, okay, like, you know, something is different here.
So it might be a new day for the 2024 Yankees. And you mentioned someone that we definitely have to speak about, and we will get to him right after this break. Welcome back to the Views from 314 Feet podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. It's Randy, it's Chris. And I want to say that I'm extremely, extremely proud and happy for this one guy on the team, because if you follow me on Twitter, I affectionately refer to him as my son, Oswaldo Cabrera. I know he had a rough year last year. It was tough to watch. But with all the Soto stuff and the wins, I couldn't have been more happy and excited for Oswaldo to be such an impact player and doing things that pretty much none of us expected him to do in this series. Played good defense for the most part, but I mean, just offensively, clearly made a difference. It was really him and Soto for three out of the four games, and super happy for him. Clearly put in a lot of work. Obviously the influence of Soto was apparent, and I know you wrote a piece on Oswaldo. So tell us what you've seen and what you've noticed with Oswaldo from the middle of spring training to today.
Yeah, well, I talked to, you know, I wrote that story on Oswaldo and Soto, I believe after he hit the game tying home run in game three. I had talked to Oswaldo maybe sometime early in the middle of March. I was talking to him mainly about just, you know, the last season, how poorly it went for him and, you know, what he had been trying to work on. He started spring 1-for-23 and it looked like he just wasn't going to make the team, even with his positional versatility. You know, you can't have someone who is that poor of a hitter on the roster. It's just not going to work. You have to try and upgrade it. And like, obviously the Yankees were skeptical themselves, because that's why they traded for John Birdie, to replace Oswaldo as the potential opening day third baseman and the third baseman for the foreseeable future, because they didn't believe in Oswaldo's ability to be a consistent hitter. So credit to him. He has definitely been that. You know, it's obviously early four games, but you know, I think there's a huge difference. You know, his approach at the plate is different, and that's what we were talking about a few weeks ago. You know, he's watching Soto work in the cage, and you know, as we all know, Soto, yeah, he has the potential to be a power hitter, but he's really not. Like, that's not his main focus. His main focus is to be like a pure hitter. He's going to use all fields. As we saw this weekend, he has no problem hitting the opposite way. He will take singles. He will take what the defense, you know, gives him essentially. You know, there were a few hits that Soto had where he's just shooting it through holes on the field, just with where the defense is aligned. And Cabrera got it in his head. It's like, well, when I came up through the minors and I came to the Bronx in 2022, you know, I'm trying to lift the ball and hit it out into over the short porch in right field. And it's like, why am I trying to do that? Like, let me just be a hitter. Let me just be a pure hitter. And he got it in his head watching Soto. It's like, okay, like I think I can do that too. Like I can hit line drives. I can hit, you know, over the defense's head. I can still have power. Like he does have power. I think he has the potential to, you know, hit double digit home runs, even with his size. So I think for Oswaldo, just like getting it in his head that, you know, not everything has to be about, you know, launch angle and, you know, trying to have an uppercut swing to really exaggerate the fly ball. Let me just play my game and the results will come. And a big thing that he did is he changed his leg kick stance. So for like those listening, the reason why a player would change their approach at the plate, especially with the leg kick provides more power for a hitter. It can disrupt your ability to stay balanced at the plate. So that's what he was really struggling with, Cabrera. And once he changed to a toe tap approach, it's more contact oriented. It's less movement. Your eyes are able to stay on the same level. You're not, you know, bouncing all over the place. And that's really been the biggest difference for Oswaldo. Soto has a leg kick himself, but Soto has, you know, arguably the quickest hands in baseball, and he's able to do things that, frankly, most players can't. Oswaldo doesn't have the quickest hands, but with him having the ability now to stay balanced with the toe tap approach, you know, so far it's made the biggest difference. And, you know, I'm not supposed to root for players in my job, but, you know, I am happy seeing Oswaldo have success. He is the nicest player in the Yankees clubhouse. He is by far the friendliest, by far the most approachable. So I really do hope it works out for him, because I really genuinely enjoy talking with him, not even just about baseball, just about anything. He is that friendly where you can talk to him about literally anything.
So another thing that a lot of people notice watching the four games during his at-bats, and there'd been talk about it during the spring, but it's pretty clear that Oswaldo is picking and choosing when to be a switch hitter. I know that he was batting righty against Valdez in his first couple of at-bats on opening day. Didn't go as well. Went lefty on lefty a couple times. Hit the home run against Abreu. Obviously, he was lefty then, but against some of the Astros lefties, he had also stayed lefty-lefty. Even did it against Hader a couple times as well. And I was listening to the radio broadcast, I believe, on Saturday, and Susan Waldman had mentioned that part of the reason for why he wanted to go left on left was because he could see he felt more comfortable against higher velocity left on left as opposed to from the right side. Now, I don't know if that was something that she had just had a private conversation with him about it or if that was something that he had mentioned to you guys, but clearly it was working for him. He was much more productive and impactful from the left side than he was from the right. So do you think, I don't think he's going to totally go away from switch hitting. I think that there's obviously an advantage to doing it, but do you anticipate him being more of a lefty hitter for the majority of his at-bats moving forward? Or do you think that he's still like searching his way and hasn't really landed on a particular side that he wants to really focus on?
Yeah, I mean, asking Oswaldo himself, he'll tell you that he's still a switch hitter. You know, I asked Boone after Saturday's game, he was like, Oswaldo obviously is a much better hitter from the left side. It's like, do you even see him hitting right-handed anymore? And, you know, they think that he is still a switch hitter. I don't know how much I personally believe it. I'm sure he'll have right-handed at-bats moving forward, but I don't know how many. I mean, it's obvious to everybody watching that he has way more success from the left side of the plate than the right side. You know, it is valuable to have that ability to be a switch hitter, obviously, in certain situations. But, you know, as of now, they're saying that he is a switch hitter. They'll, you know, meet with Oswaldo prior to every series, go through the pitchers who, you know, they think that he should hit right-handed against. It's basically about the splits of a pitcher. If a pitcher is right-handed, but, you know, he's poor against right-handed hitters, well, they'll probably have Cabrera hit right-handed. Even against Hader last year, he's a difficult matchup for anybody, but last year lefties actually hit Hader better. But you know, if you look at his career, he's just a challenge from either side, but last year lefties hit him better from the left side of the plate. But I just think moving forward, most of his at-bats, if not all, should be from the left side. He's just a different hitter from the left side. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, as of now, they're still saying that he is a switch hitter.
Yeah, I think he feels more disciplined from the left side. Obviously, he's a way more powerful hitter from the left side, but it also feels like he just was picking up the ball better from the left side. You know, he worked a couple walks over the series as well, which is, from what I can remember, I mean, his season was so bad last year that you can't really, I mean, it was just bad. It's not much of a reference there, but I didn't really remember him having deep counts or really having at bats where he was really fighting the pitcher. It was more just, he was kind of searching just to make contact and try to drive the ball, and obviously didn't have much success. But it just felt like he was picking up the ball better from righties and lefties in this series from the left side, and had way better consistency from that perspective. Even the strikeouts, he had good at-bats. I mean, I don't really remember him having many bad at-bats from the left side. It felt like he had an opportunity to do some damage every time that he came to the plate from the left side. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully for him, I root for him. I mean, I don't hide that. I'm happy that he did well. I hope that it keeps up. I do like the Birdie acquisition. Birdie saved the game yesterday with that play in the ninth inning. So, I mean, I always believe, and this is obvious, but sometimes people make it more complicated. You can never have enough good players. So if Oswaldo grows into an important weapon for them, whether it's off the bench or in this platoon with Birdie, I mean, it's only going to be beneficial for the Yankees. So hopefully for them, it keeps going. And hopefully for him, you know, he has a solid year. So I want to bunch these two guys together that we're going to talk about next. Young guys, friends, obviously, Chicken Parm and the history of Chicken Parm with Anthony Volpe and Austin Wells. But I thought that, you know, both of them had fantastic series that will go under the radar just because of Soto and Oswaldo and how the series unfolded. But I thought Volpe was really good. I think that his swing changes have really made a difference. His commitment to working at bats and kind of having that Gleyber jump just in terms of plate discipline. Obviously, Gleyber had that big jump in walk percentage and that drop in strikeout rate last year. And it feels like Volpe might be, obviously, he's only four games, but it seems like there's an opportunity that he's creating for himself to do the same thing. So he was really good, but I thought Wells was really good. And it was just like in these subtle baseball ways that aren't going to scream out to you. But the bunt obviously was a big play. I thought he was good behind the plate. I thought he had good at bats. I just thought the two of them together made really solid contributions throughout the entire series that made a difference in some of these wins.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think they would have more attention if it wasn't for Soto and just what he did the entire weekend, especially Volpe. You know, Volpe gets on base 8 times in 3 games. He didn't play Sunday because of his upset stomach. That just didn't happen last year. He was working counts, getting deep into counts. He saw 70 pitches against the Astros. He swung and missed twice. That didn't happen last year. You know, swing and miss was a huge problem for Volpe last season, and it got to a point where opposing pitchers were just attacking him up in the zone with fastballs, breaking pitches off low and outside of the zone. He would swing and miss at them all the time. That just didn't happen this weekend. I think that's probably the most fascinating thing about Volpe's weekend is just the fact of how different he looked just battling, fouling pitches off instead of swinging and missing. I mean, that all those pitches add up because you're working the opposing pitcher. And as we've seen against the Astros, the Yankees as a whole chased their starters early in games, and then they got to the bullpen. The Astros have like three quality relievers and they're all back end guys, but they really struggled in those middle innings because they got chased early, the starters. It will be interesting to see if Volpe is able to continue his ability to work pitchers. I think he's now, I don't have the stats in front of my face, but last I saw, he was like one of the, I think top 10 in pitches per plate appearance. Again, that didn't happen last year. And I think a lot of that has to do with the swing changes he made this offseason by flattening his bat path. For Wells, I think he only played twice. Yeah, he played twice against the Astros. He worked some really big walks like Volpe. He was just working pitchers. He had an 8-pitch walk prior to Cabrera's game-tying home run in Game 3 against Abreu. That was a huge at-bat. You know, he passed the baton to Cabrera. Cabrera hits a 2-run homer, and the Yankees are back in the game. I also was very impressed with what he did behind the plate. I think pitchers really like throwing to him. That was something that last season with Kyle Higashioka, some pitchers just didn't prefer him. They didn't prefer him behind the plate. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason why they moved on from Higashioka. Well, so far, even going back to last September when he came up, you know, there's definitely been a bad rap about his catching ability. But just talking with pitchers since last September and in spring and now, they really think he's a good game caller. They really think he's a good receiver. You know, there are some flaws with him. He doesn't have the strongest arm. I do think, you know, if you get a team, I'm very curious to see what the Diamondbacks do.
Right.
They're a fast team. Right. And I'm curious to see if they're going to take advantage if Wells is behind the plate because he just doesn't have a strong arm. But I do think his ability to receive and call games behind the plate is much more advanced than what it was a couple of years ago when he was coming up through the minor league system. So I think it was an encouraging weekend for those two guys and for the Yankees to really be their best. Like they need those two guys
yep.
to step up and have good seasons. If they have good seasons, those two guys, the Yankees could be extremely dangerous because we know what Soto is going to do. We know what Judge will eventually do. We know what Gleyber will eventually do. But if they get guys like Volpe, Cabrera, Wells to be average hitters, even just average hitters, it's going to go a long way for the Yankees this year.
Yeah, I mean, I gave my bold prediction and with Volpe being a top five shortstop, I think, again, I don't know if you'll get to that level this year, but I feel extremely confident that he's going to be in that group of players that you mentioned. I think Volpe's really good. And I know he caught a lot of flack because people want to obsess over OPS and batting average, which is fine and valid. And I get it. And I'm not debating what the numbers say, but I think when you're a 21-year-old rookie who skips an entire level, who is meant to be a supporting piece on a team that has title aspirations and everything is crumbling around you, and then all of a sudden you kind of become one of the centerpieces of the lineup when you're probably not ready for that, and still come away with a 2020 season and a gold glove, whether it should have gone to him or not, he put himself in that position. I think that that's a really strong start for him to build on in a season like this. So, I mean, I'm all in on Volpe. I think he's going to be one of those like core players sooner than later. And I feel like he got off to a really good start. And speaking of good starts, maybe not in the way that you would anticipate it, but a player that made a pretty good impression on everybody, Alex Verdugo. And the Yankees finally having an actual left fielder on their roster and on the field and making defensive plays clearly made a huge difference in this series. Offensively, not as impactful as everybody else. I mean, he ran some at bats, but his impact was with the glove, and he made a huge difference in these four games. Obviously, the big catch to seal the win on Sunday, that great catch in the gap. I don't know if that was on Friday, day it was, almost making that diving catch in the gap, probably in the same game. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have my reservations about Verdugo. I still do for different reasons, various reasons. But his glove was tremendous, and his energy was great. And I know you wanted to talk about his defense.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a disaster last season in left field. How many times I watched Jake Bowers and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Cabrera, Franchi, Willie Calhoun, whoever. My
Jeez.
Mom.
That's My a grandma. Bad list. They were like running in the opposite direction sometimes of the fly ball.
I mean, like everybody played left field last season. It was a joke. It's just different in left field, and it's important because left field is a big position in Yankee Stadium, especially. And I think just having a competent outfielder, someone who actually plays outfield, not Jake Bowers, who's the first baseman, and Cabrera, who's an infielder. Kiner-Falefa, I mean, he was in left field. I mean, it was a comedy show last season. So just having someone like Verdugo out there, I do think can make a big difference. You know, again, even if he's an average bat, that's way better than what they had last year with the cast of characters they had. Just catching fly balls is a big difference. It's
yeah.
I mean, it's funny to say, but like, it's a huge difference. Like those plays add up. You know, Aaron Hicks going down the line and you know, just walking over to the ball while run score. Like it just makes a difference having somebody out there. You know, you don't have to talk too long about it, but it was noticeable how good of a defender Verdugo is and should be. And I do think that, you know, his defense alone at least saved a run and possibly the game on Sunday. So I do think it was important to highlight Verdugo in left field.
You bring up the Aaron Hicks disaster play, and I won't name names, but people can connect the dots if they want. There was a family member of a famous Yankee that I was in a suite with during that game, and that play happened, and we're looking, and this family member was so disgusted by that Hicks play. This person just threw their hands up and pretty much like captured the entire energy of the stadium, because that was when the Yankees were like really struggling and like in the midst of that kind of like slide before they stopped themselves from totally blowing the division. And it was just hilarious because, you know, it was just like a bad moment. And then this person who has a connection to the Yankees and just being beside themselves and just having enough with the Aaron Hicks left field experience. I felt vindicated that it wasn't just like me or like the fans, but like somebody in that position also noticed how bad it was. So I'm happy that Verdugo hopefully – or it looks like he's cleaned that up a little bit, and we won't have to go through that for another season. And as I recollect myself going over the list that you just mentioned of left fielders, we'll take a break, and then we'll be back. We'll talk a little pitching, and then we'll get to some of your mailbag questions. Welcome back to the Views from 314 Feet podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My dog Tim is looking at me like, why are you guys still blabbing? I have thoughts and you haven't asked me, but maybe he'll chime in at some point. But some of you have chimed in with mailbag questions, and we're very thankful for you guys emailing us, and we're going to get to a couple of them. And we will start on the topic of pitching. So, Eddie Soto, my guy, Eddie J. Soto on Twitter, follow him. He asks us, so pitching long-term is a concern. Do you think they wait a few starts from each starting pitcher to make changes, or they, meaning the Yankees, will roll with what they have till the trade deadline? I know Cole is coming back in a few months, but it is still a concern to me. Is pitching a concern for you or not, or how do you feel about Eddie's question?
I mean, I think the depth they have is a little concerning. You know, Chase Hampton goes down with a UCL sprain. Don't know how long he's going to be out for just yet. You know, I still have some concerns about Carlos and Nestor. You know, I thought both of those guys were fine in their first starts. Nothing special. Just all right. Like, that's fine. I think with the lineup they have, just keeping them in games is important, and they did their jobs. Nothing I saw from Clark Schmidt on Sunday told me that this guy can't take the step forward that we talked about in our first episode. I thought he was good. You know, I'm curious to see how Luis Gil looks tonight, because I do think that he has the potential to be, like, incredible. I'm very curious to see what he looks like. I'm not that concerned just with the rotation right now. I think it has the potential to be fine. You know, if they need outside additions, you know, they're obviously going to have to wait until the trade deadline at this point. It's hard to make trades this early in the season. So they're going to roll with what they have. You know, I thought Stroman was really good. He probably had the best outing out of the four pitchers.
Yeah.
Not probably. He did have the best outing. I think they have the potential to be a good rotation with Cole sidelined. And once Cole comes back, I think, you know, some of these questions that we have go away. But as of now, I think they should be fine.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's obviously one turn through the rotation, but they face a pretty difficult lineup to navigate as well. I mean, to come right out of the gate and you're facing a team with the offensive profile of Houston's, it's not the easiest test. I thought that, like you said, I thought they did fine. I thought the one positive is that they all battled. Mm-hmm. It was kind of bend not break defense and pitching. Defense more like in a football sense, but I thought that they made the pitches that they needed to make, as opposed to the Astros not always making the pitches that they needed to make. And I thought that was a big difference in the series. I also think that as long as they can keep the offense in the game and allow the bullpen to be an impact from game to game, the starting pitching will be fine. I just think that they can't lose the games early on, if that makes sense. And I feel confident from what we've seen so far. Again, it's early. That's always the context for this. But the offense will be plenty fine and probably give themselves an opportunity to come back or establish an early lead. And I think the bullpen is going to be a weapon again. I mean, it's just endless guys just executing and different looks, and the bullpen was really impressive. So I just think the rotation just needs to do its job and keep everybody else in the game and everybody else to take care of it. And they're more than capable of doing that and more. I thought Rodon responded well as the game went on, and when he needed to make pitches, he did so. I thought Stroman was really good and got bit by bad defense. He probably could have gone seven in that game if there was better defense behind him. And I agree with Clark. I picked him up on my fantasy team, like you suggested last week. I think we were both in agreement that we feel like he can take the next step. I thought he was really good yesterday until, you know, the third time through the order, which we're going to have to watch. And I think that that's true for a lot of pitchers, but we're going to have to see with him, and he's going to have to get better at that. But again, the third time through the order was Altuve, Yordan, Kyle Tucker. You know, that's not easy. So yeah, I don't really have a concern right now, but I agree about the depth. They're going to have to address the depth. Even when Cole comes back, I feel like they just need one more pitcher, even if it's on the back end, just to protect themselves, because I strongly doubt they'll be healthy the entire year.
So I also think it's important to Shout out the bullpen. They were spectacular.
Yeah.
In Houston. 15 and a third innings, zero runs. Ian Hamilton looked unreal. Loizaga was all right. I didn't think he had his like best stuff, but he was still good.
Birdie was really good.
Birdie came in and he was, I mean, he, I think he's incredible. I think he's going to be really good. They have a lot of depth back there. I think it was stupid that I think it was like MLB Network put out like their top 10 bullpens coming into the season and the Yankees weren't on there. The Yankees always have a good bullpen. They pick up a guy off the street like Ian Hamilton, and Hamilton is now like one of the best relievers in baseball. So right. Like there's no reason to doubt the Yankees bullpen. Like if there's one thing, even if you're like you're the biggest Yankees hater out there, you have to give them credit for what they do in the bullpen, because they just find these guys who nobody has heard of and turn them into stars. I mean, Clay Holmes was atrocious with the Pirates.
Right.
You know, he was shaky this weekend, but I still don't really get the Clay Holmes hate, because if you look at his numbers since he's been with the Yankees, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. If you just look at the statistics, like I get he's not Mariano Rivera, but nobody is. Right. So I think the bullpen definitely should also alleviate some concerns that people may have about the rotation. Because I think those guys will keep them in games.
Yeah, for sure. And they're adding Jake Cousins and his nasty slider to that bullpen. So, I mean, there's another guy that they're probably just going to tweak, do some things here and there, and then he's probably going to be filthy like the rest of them. So, the bullpen is really good, and MLB Network was playing themselves with that one. I didn't understand that. Although, I will say, I miss Wandy. And Wandy should have been a Yankee for life. That's just my personal preference. But shout out to the Yankees bullpen and shout out to Wandy forever. Okay, next question. Andrew Tweedy gives us a bunch of compliments. So thank you, Andrew. Thank you for supporting us. Very happy about that and glad you enjoyed the first episode and hopefully the rest of the episodes. So there was an interaction with someone on Twitter asking if Giancarlo Stanton goes 1-for-5 with a home run. Is it a good game? Kind of felt like bait, but maybe not. Who knows? But that leads to Andrew's question. I'm wondering how you guys think about success for different types of hitters, particularly on the Yankees. Shedding some light on that front might help listeners understand a little bit better how to assess performances at the plate between the Stantons versus the Volpes versus the LeMahieus of the world. First off, we're not authorities. So you could just take what we say with a grain of salt. I think everybody has a right to their opinion and they see what they see. I will say off the bat, if a Major League Baseball hitter hits a home run, he had a good game. That is the most optimal result that the sport allows you to have. And if you're able to actually achieve that, you had a good day. 1-for-5, 1-for-6, you hit a home run. There are not many people on planet Earth that can hit a major league pitch for a home run. So that's how I feel. I do think that you have to evaluate people on their skill sets. I don't think that you should be expecting Anthony Volpe to give you a 40 home run campaign. And I don't think that you should expect Giancarlo Stanton, especially in this stage of his career, to try to steal 40 bases. I mean, I think there's some like common sense that goes into it. And there's clearly a lot of metrics and statistics that provide a much stronger context and paint a good picture of performance. I think that you can go beyond OPS and OPS plus. I mean, I think we're kind of at this stage where there's other things to look at beyond that. And I think that there are metrics to look at it if you really want to dig deep into it. But I think it requires some like effort and research and having an understanding of the player's skill sets and then putting them in that context and then looking at it more holistically with under the radar stuff and also statistics. I mean, I think it has to be a combination of all of those things, which is something that, Chris, I appreciate in your writing. I think that that's what you do when you talk about players, which I appreciate as a reader. So I kind of feel like I know how you look at it, but would love to hear your thoughts.
I mean, I agree with everything you just said. Like I really don't have much else to add, because I feel the same way. I also think, unfair or not, if Stanton's making $30 million, like the right. expectations are going to be higher for him than right. someone who is on the league minimum, like Oswaldo Cabrera. They're just different levels of measuring success with those two guys. Like if Cabrera is a league average bat, I think that's a really good season for Cabrera. Whereas if Stanton, who's a designated hitter, if he's a league average bat, I don't really think that's a good season, because like you need more out of right. your DH, especially with someone like Stanton who really can't play the field anymore. He has to be better. So you just have to, a lot of this is common sense. Like you said, you're not going to expect Stanton to steal 40 bases, but hitting 40 homers or coming close to it, I think, is also important to, right. to measure Stanton's success. Or, you know, if we look at DJ LeMahieu, you want DJ to be an on-base guy. You want him to have like a 350 on-base percentage, play good defense at third base, and that is a successful season for DJ. So, like, it's just knowing the different players and, like, what their skill sets are is also very important. And also just understanding, like, their contracts, too, because, you know, if Aaron Judge is a league average bat and he's just okay in center field, well, that's a disappointing season. That's right. beyond disappointing. He's making $40 million. You have to be better than that. So I think what you said checks out. I really don't have much else to add with measuring success. I think it's pretty straightforward. You just have to understand which player you're talking about and what their skill sets are.
I would also add that it can't all be through an offensive prism. And I think that it happens way too much when people mm-hmm. talk about players. You have to look at defense. You have to look at base running. You have to look at the entire scope of the sport. And I think that it's obviously the most impactful part, and the whole point is to score runs. But you also have to prevent runs. And that's true for a position player. It's not just on the pitching side. And I think that especially, you know, when we talk about Soto and how impactful he was, part of the reason why he was so impactful in Houston was because he played great defense. And he ended up showing for four games at least that he's a better defensive player than we thought. So that adds even more value to what he brings to the team. So I think in looking at players in totality, I really beg people to look at it from all three aspects of the game, and not just when somebody makes an error or somebody makes a boneheaded play on the base pass, but when they also do positive things, and just kind of look at it holistically from a lot of different angles. That would be, that's something that like I really ask of people in general, not just for the Yankees, but for like every player. Cause that always reminds me of the Ken Griffey Jr. Mike Trout debate I had for like 3 days back in 2020. And it was like all about offense and everybody just ignored defense, but we won't go there. We'll have that debate one other day. All right. So I don't know this person's name because he or she did not include it, but it is Jay Arena or Jay Reyna, as I won't say the whole email to protect you. How long a runway do you give players before forming opinions? When does performance go from small sample size to real? And then this person talks about the four lineups and being aggressive with the lineups and playing the hot hand with Oswaldo. What do you think about that? When do we start really saying that, okay, this is how the season is going for a player?
Like 6 weeks. I mean, it's a long season, so it's not going to be four games. Like, again, we're not giving Oswaldo the MVP after four games, but – you know, can he do this for a month and a half? If it's mid-May and Oswaldo's still hitting, you know, over 300 or even close to it, like, yeah, I think that's something to note for sure. So just because of how long the season is, again, it's 162 games, you have to have a good chunk of games before you're starting to draw opinions. A quarter of the season is what, 40 games. So yeah, we're talking about mid-May where you can start really drawing conclusions. When I covered basketball, they also use like the quarter season mark to really understand like, all right, where are we at? It's game 20 of 82. Where are we at in the season? You know, are we trending in the right direction? What's going well? What's not? What do we need to fix? So I would say for baseball, about 40 games for a hitter and for a pitcher, 5 to 6, if we're talking about a starter, like 5 to 6 starts before it's time to start drawing some conclusions about just where they are in their seasons. Relievers, it's different. Relievers, it's kind of like, because they don't pitch on the same schedule, so it's kind of harder to draw conclusions. But, you know, after like 10-ish innings of relief that these guys pitch, you can have some sort of idea of like, all right, yeah, like, you know, this guy's good or this guy's struggling. Maybe we should go to a different guy. So it's just different just depending on like what position these guys play too.
I agree. I don't really have much to add to that one. Thank you everybody for the questions. We got two questions about Jason Dominguez and how that fits. I will bring those questions up when we know when Jason might be back. I think it's a little too early to talk about Jason Dominguez and how will that work roster wise, but I will bring it up when we have a better idea of if Jason is coming, when he will come, and then we can certainly get into it. I think they're great questions. It's probably a little premature. So I just wanted to shout out that we got the questions, but we'll hold off on it so we can give a better answer once we have more information. So thank you everyone for sending us mailbag questions. Thank you to everyone that has been listening so far and is now a part of the bandwagon. And thank you for supporting us. We're going to, in the near future, try to get some guests on as well and come up with more things to make the podcast even better. Please follow us and subscribe on all your favorite podcast platforms. If you feel like giving us a 5-star review, we would greatly appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Chris, have a good time out in Arizona. I hope that you packed enough clothes and that you'll be back in New York in no time. And hopefully the Yankees, by the time you hear this, will still be undefeated and go like 10-0 or whatever it is, 11-0. That would be great. Then we'd have a lot of even more positive stuff to talk about. Chris, any last words?
No, I'm excited to check off another ballpark of mine. I've never been to Chase Field, so I think this is ballpark 22, 21 for me. So nice. Excited to check another one off.
Nice. All right, so thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you for checking us out, and we will speak to you next week.